మననం మననం ఇది ధ్యాసనం. Welcome dear listeners to this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. For those of you who follow us regularly, you know that we go through the 1991 summer course series in this edition of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, and we have completed the clips that we had. That is, each discourse is broken up to many clips, as you know, and we have completed all the discourse clips that we had to play. Last week we ended the 13th discourse and the final discourse in the series. And as we promised you last week, we have come back here for giving you a summary of what we heard in this entire series. I know it's going to be quite a Herculean task because we did this whole program over 21 months. That's what I just figured out. We started in Sankranti of last year. So to be able to summarize all of that in one session or two sessions is going to be difficult, but we will try our best. The hope with which we are doing the summary is so that those of you who have missed out some of the episodes before will get a fair idea of what some of these discourses are about, and hopefully that will enthuse you and interest you to go back and listen to these discourses. And the entire program, the Shravanam Mananam program, is done with the idea that it rekindles in us fond interest in Swami's discourses, and we all go back to Swami's discourses and listen, re-listen, and as the topic suggests, do that mananam or recapitulation in our mind and pray for Nididhyasanam to happen. So before we go into the summary, we can't do that without Brother Hari with us, so let's invite Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam, Sairam Pri.
And we really need to pray to Swami before doing the summary, because when I look back, we just went through all the scripts of the discourses. I mean, it's an understatement to say that this is a very profound series, because in so many ways, and we're so glad that we're having this opportunity to break up the discourse into small clips and listen to it. Because even now, sometimes when you go through the script of some of these discourses, many small finer points are left out. You know, we kind of gloss through the whole text, and we tend to feel that, yeah, this is a concept I've heard before. This is something which I've, you know, heard in other discourses. But so many beautiful points, especially the flow of thought which Swami has expressed. And dear listeners, Hari and myself have decided that we will not be able to go through all the points that Swami has made in all the discourses.
Yeah.
We will... We've culled out a few standout points in some of these discourses, which were very striking even as we were doing the program. When we go back and look at these discourses, that's what is appealing to us. But definitely the points which are missing out is not any way less profound than what is being mentioned in the summary. So with prayers to Swami, let's hope that we are able to do a fair amount of justice to what these discourses are. So the 13 discourses in the series, and as always, the first discourse is more like a mood setter, an appetizer. We've seen the 1990 summer course series where the first discourse was about culture. And in a similar fashion, the first discourse in this series is about education itself, and that's what made this discourse very, very profound, where Swami spoke about value education and how... of course, we call it value education. Swami does not differentiate education from values. In fact, education without values is not education at all.
Because he starts off, actually, I thought going to the first couplet, because we can see that this was Swami's intention throughout the series of discourses. So in essence, Swami is saying that while you may have a lot of achievements in the worldly sphere, like Swami mentions, untold gold, or you may be able to count the number of stars in the sky, name all the species of living beings. That is, you reach the pinnacle of scholarship. But Swami says that unless you have mastered the control over body and senses, and if you have studied the mind and you were able to turn it inward, and you acquire a firm and a selfless heart, none of this is really of any consequence.
Right.
And so that is the sutradhar, you know, the entire... what shall we say, the underlying theme that is running through the entire, in fact, of all of spirituality, in fact.
Mm. Right. Going straight to some of the points which were very striking in this, in this particular discourse, one very beautiful mention that Swami made, maybe over a few paragraphs in this discourse, was Swami was saying that how when you detach certain aspects from their purpose, how they become hollow. And in that context, Swami was saying education and character. The purpose of education is character. If you remove character from education, and that is what has happened to today's education, that Swami says. And science, and that was another point which Swami made, that all scientific learning and understanding is to improve life of human beings so that they can pursue their purpose better. I think, you know, whether it is health, whether it is learning or communication, all of that is meant to help human life better, and the purpose of human life is human values. So Swami is saying if you remove human values from science, then science becomes demonic. And that is the other point that Swami mentioned. And then, of course, Swami made a reference to politics, where politics again is, you know, when we talk of politics, the words which come to our mind is diplomacy, or the ability to share what is a commonwealth, right? And that comes down to ethics. And if you remove the idea of ethics from politics, again, that becomes draconian. That is one thing which Swami had mentioned.
So Swami says that the world is benefited by those who demonstrate humanness in action rather than only in name. So that is what we see, you know, wherever greed overtakes somebody, animal qualities tend to dominate. And Swami is trying to have us like temper all of that down. So Swami has in fact mentioned, you know, various qualities that in, you know, if you see the paragraph headings, they kind of demonstrate the characteristics which on the surface, you know, ultimate, the learnings that that the education should leave them with, right? So first, like Swami, of course, as he spoke about human values as being the primary need, but Swami says that to begin with, education must develop selflessness. In the end, you endowed with education, when we see this in the subsequent discourses, that the idea is to equip you with skills that would again help you serve society. Then Swami speaks about, how money is desirable, that you should go out and earn as students, but then you should understand its limits such that you do not become a slave. That's in the subsequent discourses we did explore that idea, that you use the money instead of money beginning to use you. Again, one more point is that it should leave students with the inquiry of who they truly are, not take themselves, you know, for the body and the mind, which is what is the purport of most education. But to go beyond that, to keep inquiring that, or make you aware that you're a person that is beyond that. Swami again places a lot of emphasis. This is, I think, the teachers, if they're listening, or even the parents, they must orient their teaching along these lines. To skill your knowledge, Swami speaks about skilling the, that is, they should know how to apply it at the very least. And as we said, apply why? So that it is for the service of society. And Swami used to always emphasize this common sense, right? Knowing what to do. In fact, common sense went beyond, you know, when you say skilling knowledge, it doesn't mean that learn how to do some, say, a mechanical or an electrical repair. More than that, it was like knowing what is the appropriate thing to say or do at that particular moment. So, in that sense, Swami used to say, you know, that you should know these, like a worldly kind of knowledge. And you control your senses. They should learn that not to let their senses go wild, right? And these are some of the things, like too much freedom is harmful. And very important for Swami is developing love for the motherland. That mother and motherland are greater than heaven itself. So that idea being inculcated in the students. And of course, the importance of the mind as the key to both bondage as well as liberation. So Swami feels that these are some of the things that a teacher must bring up with students, have them discuss in class, and look at bringing that to the surface. As Swami used to say, educare. The idea is that all of this is already contained in the students. it's buried somewhere deep within. To bring that to the surface is the idea of whole of education.
Absolutely. As I mean, even as you were saying, that this is what we had mentioned in the summary when we did the first discourse. Yeah. You were not with us then. Where we said, Swami clearly says 9 points which are just given, most of it you've mentioned.
Right.
And this is very important, especially for parents, for educators, and even for students who are keen on listening, in picking up what Swami wants education to grant. And in that sense, as you beautifully said, I'll summarize once again without going into the detail properly, just in point
like
forms. Point number one, Swami said, it should propagate values, not cleverness. Mm. Point number two, it should develop unity of thought, word, and deed.
Right.
You should detach education from jobs. That is one thing that Swami said. Ceiling on desires, inculcate patriotism, inculcate the desire to serve others, keep seeing if education is making you broad-minded and selfless, and education must promote self-inquiry, and it should propagate self-satisfaction. So these are like 9 points that Swami said through the various discussions in that discourse, where Swami said these are the things which as educators, as parents, we have to ensure that education does. If your regular school education is not doing this, then you will have to ensure that in your interaction with the children, in your interaction with your wards in school or otherwise, you have to ensure that these lessons are also passed on to the students.
Right.
So is there anything else you'd like to add on this discourse, Hari?
Not in this discourse, like I was just seeing that this basically sets the, the foundation for what happens in the remaining discourses. Like, as you said, I was not there for this discourse, but when I see the points, I see that Swami has elaborated them in the subsequent discourses. But we begin to see how Swami takes the students, you know, slowly through the thoughts that he wants to introduce them to.
Right.
The next one is a very gentle introduction actually to the idea of spirituality, like the evolution of why in the first place humankind itself began to
inquire.
Why. So you can see that Swami goes through it, you know, through so many paths. Like on the one hand he says that so people started feeling that there's first of all an inexplicable feeling within everyone that there is something imperceptible that happens beyond the body and the mind, you know, some phenomena somewhere that they couldn't really explain, like a synchronicity of events or something that would take them by so much surprise it would feel like, you know, there is something that we are unable to, and so trying to put a name to that, right? Or so in the sense they realize that they're all covered by some veil of ignorance, and seeing the sun as that illumination, they would pray to the sun. So Swami gives that example of how he started worshipping the sun. And so that came out as the Gayatri Mantra, which is a prayer to the sun to illumine us and thus dispel the sea of darkness. And then again Swami said that through numbers, right? They saw that every number is basically, you can arrive at every number through one, which is essentially one of the foundations of mathematics itself, actually. Mm. Piano's axioms, it's called.
Okay.
And the Swami is saying that when people became aware of this idea,
concept,
that
right.
So they saw that basically it is one that is becoming many.
Right.
That was one of the thoughts that started growing in the sages of then.
Mm.
And then they saw the sun itself. And so the concept of, so the Dvadasha Adityas, the 12 Adityas that rule every month, and actually in essence the various processes that govern our life, right? And then Swami says that the Ishavasya Upanishad is where the idea came that in fact this is the one that pervades everything. It is the one that is, you know, prevalent across the universe in the very first statement of the Ishavasya Upanishad.
Right.
And as they meditated more and more upon the divinity, they realized that there's one thing that they were never able to capture it in words, and nor were they ever able to even in their mind form an idea of what this self is, you know. Mm. It seemed to be prevalent everywhere. So that's how they saw that it is aprameya. It's something that cannot even be reached by the mind. And Swami speaking of gives this what I could gather, you know, the the advice that Hanuman gives to Vibhishana, which as we say, every discourse has the abstract, the theory part, then the practical part, most of which deals with what we can do, you know, to put that concept into effect. And Swami speaks about the conversation that happened between Hanuman and Vibhishana, where Vibhishana says that I have been praying to Lord Rama for so long and I have not got the proximity that you have got. That, you know, you are so close and dear to the Lord, whereas I who have been chanting His name. And Hanuman points out that the missing dimension is, while you are doing Namasmarana, the missing dimension is Seva. So he says that the Nama on one side and the Seva, the work on the other, they both have to go together. And so Swami brings about this concept. Yeah.
Looking at this discourse, I think when we were going through this discourse, Akakali Masal, really, really thrilled by this discourse. Because the beautiful way by which Swami was taking forward this discourse, starting with one thing, I mean, the idea of the primitive man, you know, when he looks at the sun, how he feels. When he first, a very beautiful point that Swami made was, the first problem that primitive man faced was hunger. Right? He found that as the biggest obstacle, the biggest problem that he had. So anything that helped him satisfy that, he developed a certain amount of respect and awe for that, you know, that entity, which means water, the earth. Swami said man started worshipping earth. Man started worshipping sun.
Right.
And the worship of sun, Swami said, took two diversions. One is, it helps him get the food that he wanted. So that respect. And the other thing is, Swami was talking about the idea of pratyaksha pramana. The ability to see something directly comes from the light which is there. You know, you can see things better under sunlight.
Correct.
So he associated the presence of the sun with knowledge. Swami said that beautiful correlation between the intellect or the buddhi and the sun. And that is how the Gayatri Mantra comes, Swami says. And then Swami made this very important point where he said that when the society moved towards, graduated towards agriculture and started making food and getting better at creating this food, Swami said that nourishment led to more thinking. That the man was becoming more intelligent because of the nourishment which he got. And he started thinking. And another very important point that Swami mentioned was, he all through carried this idea, what you were mentioning about Aprameya. He said, there is so much around which I cannot fathom. And that always left him with the idea of humility. And Swami said that was very important for him to explore.
Right.
In fact, that was one of the reasons why he could learn more and progressed so very drastically, because of this humility. And the other part which was very, very fascinating for us was, Swami spoke about the idea of God, how it came about. And this fact that we've mentioned, I think, in other discourses also, where Swami said the name of God came even before the form of God, because he established that the form is unknown. The first thing was, he looked at the sun and he thought that is God. And then the idea that, you know, that could be just one of the manifestations of divinity, and the idea of Adityas and all that. But this beautiful evolution of the names of God based on this idea that, you know, I am limited, so the Lord must be unlimited. So every limitation that man had, the unlimited form of that was given a name, and that was God. And Swami was saying Vishnu. Man realized that he could be only at one place at any given time. So God must be able to be at all places at all times. So that omnipresent one was given the name Vishnu. Swami says, then Swami talks about the impermanence of the body. So he talks of somebody who is beyond the effect of time. So he comes up with the name Chinmaya. And then he talks about, you know, how the idea of gold can be made into many, many objects. The forms can be many, the names can be many, but it has one form or, you know, one source. So that idea, Swami says, led to the idea of God being Hiranyagarbha, where from one womb, that material which can be formed into any number of different forms comes. And Swami says that he gives the name Hiranyagarbha. And then Swami gives the name of Ishvara. And Swami says that, you know, he had wealth. And there is that Sanskrit explanation of Sakala Aishwarya Sarupa is Ishvara. And Swami says that he comes up with this idea that maybe there's one being who has infinite wealth. And that must be God. So he gives the name Ishvara. And then the understanding of the three gunas come. So Swami says that man realizes that he is an object of these, he is a puppet under the strings of the three gunas. So he says that there must be somebody who is beyond the three gunas. So he gives the name Shiva, the auspicious one who is not under the influence of
the gunas.
So that's how the name Shiva comes. And then Swami says the name Sambhava. So he says that, you know, from the idea that I cannot manifest what I want. I have to use what is already there. The idea of the earth, the water. So he thinks that there might be one being who is able to manifest whatever he needs or whatever he wants. So he gives the name Sambhava for God. And then the idea of Swami says Isha. Isha is again, Isha is, Swami says, of the one who is, has the six Aishwaryas. So that's how he gives the name Isha, that one who has the all knowledge, all wealth, and all power, and all fame. So Swami, he says, comes up with the name Isha. And finally, Swami says the name Aprameya, that even after all this, I have not understood that person. So he must be given this name, that who is beyond all comprehension, and he gives the name Aprameya.
Right.
And I think that was the second discourse. And there was another beautiful point I think Swami makes in this discourse, when Swami was talking about this point, that he is Aprameya, he cannot be understood. So Swami says that this could lead you to a little bit of discouragement, that saying that anyway I cannot understand God. So Swami goes on to say that no, it is not like that. Sages have time and again understood God and achieved Him. Right? So Swami said you should have that confidence. And that there's one particular part where Swami was saying that first you should believe that it can be done, it can be achieved, and do what has to be done now. Don't postpone it for later. With that confidence, you do it. So Swami says you start by using sattva to give up tamas and sublimating rajas.
Right.
Which means you let go of the basal qualities, the animal qualities, that is tamas. And then you sublimate rajas, which is your active qualities, your aggression, your passions. Swami says you sublimate them. And all this through humility, shraddha and devotion. So that was the second discourse. So the third discourse was a discourse titled Tattvamasi, right? So is there, you'd like to go for that first? Right, okay. This one was a very short discourse, Tattvamasi, but the way Swami beautifully explained this concept of Tattvamasi itself, as we all know, it's a Mahavakya from the Upanishads, where it means that thou art. And oftentimes we talk of this as the final understanding of a spiritual aspirant, when he is trying to find out what is God's nature, what is the Brahman's nature. Finally he comes face to face with it and he says, no, I am that. And that is the revelation the Vedas give. But Swami was giving this beautiful explanation of how the entire creation is sustained by the statement of that thou art. And the explanation that Swami gave was, when you say tat, it means that, and you use the pronoun that for something which is distant from you, distant physically and intellectually. So Swami is saying that is something which is which is beyond your understanding, and Tvam is that which is closer to you, that which is easier for you to look at. So Swami is saying that Tat is the Atman, the Tvam is the body because it is close to you, and that which connects this body with the Atman is the mind. Swami is saying that is the concept of Asi. So the body, mind and Atman, when they come together, is Tattvam Asi. And then Swami went on to say that this Tattvam Asi is also the liberation, food and desire. Swami put it in a different way, where he said, you know, when you say tat, you're trying to attain liberation. And what are you using? You're using the desires. You're trying to sublimate your desires. So that is the asi aspect. And the tvam aspect is nourished by food. So you manipulate the, as Swami would say, the aharas and viharas. And through that you sublimate your desires and you move towards liberation. And Swami says that is another way of looking at Tattvamasi. And another beautiful way of looking at it is, Swami said that when you say Tat, it refers to God. When you say Tvam, it refers to the individual. And when you say Asi, it refers to nature. Nature is that which connects the individual with God. And that is another way of looking at Tattvamasi. So this was probably the essence of that discourse. Anything else you'd like to add to that?
So Swami, I think this is the place where Swami begins to speak about the Upanishads, so to speak.
Right.
The Ishavasi Upanishad is the first one that Swami begins to address. And he says that this is where we get introduced to the idea of how to live one's life. Right? And in, just to summarize it, Swami says that the idea is to do actions without ego coming in. This is explained much, much later, but just as an introduction. And this is also where Swami begins to delineate who a person is. And Swami says that essentially the person is composed of the prajnana. That is, the first of all, there is the constant integrated awareness, right? And after that, from that comes into being the antakarana. What we call as the inner instruments. You have the manobuddhi, chitta, ahankara, and Swami, while explaining the functions of each, no? So ahankara is the ego, manas is the basically the thoughts, right? And chitta is where the memories are stored, etc.
Right.
And Swami says that we are talking about the same mind, but according to its function, we call it manobuddhi, chitta, ahankara, manas, buddhi, chitta, and ahankara. So the person has these components within him. So the prajnana is something that is very imperceptible, right? And beyond that, we have the inner instruments, which are again imperceptible, but you begin to see the manifestations of that at the physical level,
right? Right.
So this is, I could see that this is the first step that Swami is taking the students through the Upanishads.
Exactly.
The
I think this is also the first discourse in the series where Swami defines Upanishad, which we've heard from Swami many times, when you sit down and close and you learn. And also the first discourse where Swami makes a brief mention about Pranava or Omkara, which again will feature in one of the discourses which we will come to.
Yeah. So with that, we moved into the Keno Upanishad. No? So the, or do we have...
Ishavasi Upanishad, I think, was the fourth discourse, right?
Right.
Right, the fourth one was actually Ishavasi Upanishad.
Right.
The third one was Tattvamasi, Swami said. And the fourth one was the Ishavasi Upanishad, where Swami starts with one of the Upanishads, and which he had made a reference to in the second discourse itself.
Correct.
Where he said that man starts seeing that, realizing that there must be this one entity which is multiplying itself as many. And I think Swami starts that discourse itself with a very profound and beautiful padyam. He says, the creation emerges from truth and merges back into truth, and there is no place without truth. And all that exists is a manifestation of pure unsullied truth. I think that is also from the Ishavasi Upanishad.
Yeah. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnam.
Right. Right. And is there anything else which you would like to call attention to in that discourse?
The only thing that I could see, because where I entered was at the Keno Upanishad discourse, because I was interested what happened in the background, because in the Keno Upanishad directly Swami starts speaking about the senses and...
I think one thing in Ishavasi Upanishad that Swami spoke about, I think probably we'll just make a reference to that, is the importance of the idea of sacrifice, of the idea of tyaga.
Right.
I think most of that discourse was on the idea of tyaga, where Swami was talking about tyaga and different applications of tyaga, if I could put it that way. I don't know whether I'm conveying that, because Swami was saying, when you seek pleasure, how does tyaga come into being? When you do action, how does tyaga come into that? Or when you are even serving, how does tyaga come? When you are, when you are trying to satisfy the urges of the body, the desires, the needs of the body, the hunger and knowledge, Swami was talking about how desire plays a very, very important role in each one of these stages. And Swami was talking about sacrifice itself as being a life-giving attribute in life. So I think that was one thing which Swami spoke about, and Swami was explaining how by sacrifice you actually gain more than you think you lose. That concept was being spoken about by Swami in that particular discourse. So should we move to the Keno Upanishad, the next discourse in that?
సో కేనోపనిషద్ ఐ థింక్ దట్ వాజ్ ది స్వామి గో స్టార్ట్స్ విత్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయినింగ్ లైక్ వాట్ డస్ కేనా ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ మీన్ కేనా మీన్స్ బై హూ ది వర్డ్ కేనా మీన్స్ బై హూ అండ్ బికాస్ వెన్ వీ స్పోక్ అబౌట్ ది ప్రీవియస్ కాన్సెప్ట్స్ దట్ వీ వర్ డిలినేటింగ్ హూ అ పర్సన్ ఇస్ లైక్ ప్రజ్ఞాన ది అంతఃకరణ అండ్ వీ హ్యావ్ ది కర్మేంద్రియాస్ వీ గాట్ ద జ్ఞానేంద్రియాస్ and naturally the question came that you know by is there is a power by which all of these are so the question is like by whose power does the mind move hither and thither right and
right.
and by whose by whom does the breath itself move you know the within the body itself and by what power do we speak and by what power what is the power that harnesses the ears and the eyes. This is a question which the Kenopanishad begins to ask. So Kena is by whom?
Mm-hmm.
And so Swami and he speaks about this Upanishadic story of the how the senses, first of all, the senses have all come from the elements, the Agni, Vayu, etc. And so the story of how Brahman in disguise comes and stands before Agni, Vayu and asks like, which of you is supreme? And so first right. Agni comes. And to demonstrate the power, he says, okay, so I'll place a blade of grass in front of you. And Agni tries to burn the blade of grass and Agni, which can burn everything, is unable to burn the blade of grass. Next comes Vayu and Vayu is unable to, the wind, is unable to displace that blade of grass. And so they all go to Indra. Each of them is defeated. And they go to Indra and Indra says that let me go and investigate what is happening. And when Indra goes there, Brahman is no longer present. It is the goddess Uma that is present there, a very radiant form. And it is Uma who tells that who these people encountered was none other than Brahman itself. And that is how Indra gets the knowledge of Brahman. So they say that's why the primary deities in fact are Agni, Vayu and Indra for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had the first glimpse or perception. So although Agni and Vayu, they could see Brahman in the form and they could not comprehend. Whereas Indra could not see, but he comprehended who Brahman is. So he is considered to be the primary among the deities as a result.
Okay.
And so Indra then, you know, he realizes his folly and that's how they all see that beyond the senses, the story is trying to convey that while we give primacy to the senses, there is something that lays beyond the senses. And so Swami says that is the reason why the sadhana is essentially to curb the senses and to have a ceiling on our desires, and that is the pathway to God.
Right.
Because the goddess Uma over there, it represents a desire, that because Indra who has curbed the senses, because Indra is the one who has mastery over the senses, who is the master of the senses, but he still has the desire in him.
Right.
So once, that is the final frontier, so once that is removed, God becomes, you know, apparent or present.
Right.
And towards the end of the discourse, Swami speaks about the importance of the tongue, the twofold importance. On the one hand, the tongue is associated with taste, so the desire aspect. And on the other hand, the importance of control over speech. Swami used to say that, you know, the tongue, it can essentially turn you towards harm by the wrong use of speech, or it can turn you towards, or you can maintain good relationships with the right use of speech.
Right.
And so I think this is where we discussed in so many episodes of how Swami would place emphasis on being able to say the right thing at the right time. So the importance of speech, Swami emphasized a lot in this discourse.
Right. And in fact, in this discourse, especially because the Kenopanishad, as you said, is a discourse on the senses and saying that the senses are being animated by the Dehi inside.
Mm.
That is what is the essence. So it also, when Swami was talking about that story of Indra and Goddess Uma and Brahma appearing, Swami said that, you know, the ability of the senses to perceive this divine is only limited to how much the divine is ready to reveal himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami, from there he went on and spoke about the importance of devotion, where you're saying that that final frontier of completely being able to observe the divine comes only from devotion. And right. Swami spoke about the importance of that. In fact, this is a point that Swami made even in the third discourse, where Swami said, when Swami was telling about, the second one, where Swami said that be confident, sages have achieved it, even you can achieve it. Swami said, because it is revealed by the Lord, okay. And the Lord does not wait for you to gain that acumen yourself.
Mm-hmm.
He only looks at sincerity and he only looks at the purity of the heart. And the Lord can reveal himself to anybody. He does not wait for you to intellectually become wise enough. So that's again a point which Swami mentioned here. And surprisingly, you know, discourse on Kenopanishad, the third quarter or the fourth quarter of that discourse was completely on devotion.
Right.
Where Swami spoke about various devotees like Ramdas, and of course in the context of the importance of the tongue, Swami even spoke about Hanuman, the very famous the story which Swami would say, where Vibhishana feels that I'm like the tongue in the midst of the teeth, and I have to be really careful.
Yeah.
And Hanuman says, "Don't worry, because the teeth will fall away, but the tongue will always remain." And I think that was the discourse on Kenopanishad, which was
the fifth
discourse in the series.
So next we went into one of the most important discourses, which Swami covered in almost, I think, three discourses.
Right.
Swami spent on the Prashnopanishad. The Prashnopanishad essentially had six questions, which were asked by various, they were the sons of sages.
Right.
So this Swami makes that distinction, that these were not casual enquirers, these were people who were already steeped in the knowledge, you know, of Brahman. They had been trained in that or educated in the knowledge of the Vedas and the Upanishads, and they come to Sage Pipilada to ask these questions, as to, you know, questions like how does life begin, and regarding birth and death, and these are the questions that they ask. And in fact, Swami says that when the first question is this, how did life begin? And Swami says that when the student puts this question, the sage first says that he waits for 1 year mm-hmm. before he gives him the answer. He sets him out to do various duties. He trains him how to live an ethical life, and sees whether that aspiration for the answer is still alive at the end of 1 year. It's not a casual question that is being asked. So the first question when they ask, so that's where Swami brings about one of the main, themes in this discourse or the Upanishad is of duality. That how all of creation is essentially a combination of prana and rai. That is you have got the spirit or the vital factor on one side, and you got matter on the other. So once matter is energized, that is when the creation happens. That's when they move, right? And so Swami explains this with several combination of dualities. So, but at the beginning, Swami says that creation begins with Prajapati.
Right.
And Prajapati in turn, like Swami says, the in turn gives rise to food, and food is a basis of creation. But food itself is therefore supported by the sun.
Mm.
So that's why Swami says that basically life begins with the sun. That is one of the most important factors. And so the various ways in which this analogy is given, like on the one hand, it is described as the sun and the moon. We got the sun, which denotes the prana, and the moon, which shines in the reflected light of the sun. So this Swami says that the sun and the moon, they also reflect this duality of matter and spirit.
Right.
And actually in the Upanishads, they give like various examples of the sun itself is very poetically described, as a chariot with seven wheels. And mm-hmm. so we find very poetic descriptions of the sun. And one more theme which Swami spoke about is jnatum, drashtum, and praveshtum.
Praveshtum, right.
That is that. So he gives that example of the mango. So Swami is seeing that, you know, there is knowledge, and then there is seeing, and then there is experiencing. Like, and in fact, this is what comes from the Bhagavad Gita, the three stages of knowing something. And so first Swami says that if to speak about the mango itself, Swami says that first you need to ask where are the mangoes available.
Mm.
So first stage is jnatum. So you come to know like where it is. And then you have drashtum. You actually go to the place where the fruits are available. The Swami says that you see the luscious sight of the fruits. And then finally that, you know, is you just don't see the menu. You have to consume the mango itself, and that is when you experience the complete taste.
Right.
So it is with God. So Swami says that when you are trying to find God, the first is you have to ask that where is God, where can God be seen? And that is what a guru does. And then when the guru points the way, and then you have to have that, you go through the sadhana of actually perceiving God. And then finally that experience, you melt into that experience of God, and that's when you get the complete taste of what Brahman is.
Right. And the interesting thing about this discourse or about the Prashnopanishad itself is, it's almost the contrary version of the discussion which happens, I think, between Uddalaka and Shvetaketu, where, you know, the son comes back and he says, no, everything comes from food. Yeah. And then he goes and meditates and he says, no, prana is more important. And he comes back and every iteration, he comes with a more profound understanding of the whole thing. This is the other way around. As you said, the disciples are made to stay for 1 year and the guru tests whether they have this yearning still. And it's exactly the other way around, because the student asks the guru the question and the guru answers in that same sequence in which the disciple actually arrives at the answer. He says, you know, Prajapati is the one who is the source of everything. And the disciple says, you know, I've stayed here for 1 year and this is the answer you give me. And then he says, tell me who is Prajapati. And he says, Prajapati is food. So where does the food come from? He says, comes from Varunadeva, who is the god of the rains. Then he says, what about Varunadeva? He says, you know, he is dependent on the sun, and, you know, that whole sequence. But the other very beautiful point which stood out for us, for me at least, when we were going through this discourse was when Swami was talking about what is the goal of life itself. Because as I've mentioned before, many discourses have come across this, where Swami will be talking about what is the goal of life, but Swami stops short of explaining what is the goal of life. Swami will say, you should pursue the goal of life, but Swami will never define what is the goal of life.
Mm.
But in this discourse, Swami actually makes that point. He says, develop familiarity with good and bad and make an effort to follow good, then convey the good to others for their welfare. That is the true purpose of life.
Okay.
Swami makes that as one of the answers which the students get from the guru.
Right.
And Swami says, and after that Swami goes on to the idea of jnatum, drashtum and praveshtum, where Swami says, constantly using your discrimination, constantly using your senses to distinguish between what is good and what is bad, and to pursue your purpose. And more importantly, Swami says, the ability to share that knowledge with others.
Right.
And as we will come across in future discourses, and very regularly we come across in discourses, Swami says, first experience and then share.
You
know, but what we generally tend to do is, the moment we feel that we know a little more than others, we are more keen to share, even before we start experiencing and establishing ourselves in that. The sequence is, Swami says, you understand, you practice it, and then also share it with others, and that is the purpose of life.
Right.
So that was the first discourse on the Prashnopanishad.
And as covered only the first question. In fact,
right.
It was a very long elaboration, only the very first question as to how did life begin. And in the next discourse, Swami addresses two other questions. So the students, they ask, like, are birth and death inescapable? A very vital question.
Right.
And so Swami goes into the concepts of the Uttarayana and the Dakshinayana. Where he differentiates, no, that essentially the Dakshinayana is what we call as the southern path.
Right.
And again, these two themes do repeat in various ways in the Prashnopanishad itself. So Dakshinayana is the path where a soul after death goes to the Chandraloka as a merit of, you know, as an accrual of all the merits that it has achieved. through rituals, you know. But all the time that the rituals have been done were for material gains.
Right.
So hence Swami says that the soul therefore goes to the Chandraloka. And you go through all the, you know, the pleasures that you had prayed for. But when the time comes, when you've exhausted all of that merit, you again go back to the world and right. the cycle starts. Whereas the Uttarayana, which is the northern path, is superior in the sense that this is a result of acts that you have done, Swami says, which lead to attachment to Brahman. So where the quest is for the Lord himself, you know, when acts which are performed with that intent and not with the intent of any material gain, Swami says that that leads to attachment to Brahman, which in turn then leads to the knowledge of Brahman.
Right.
So that was one of the that is the starting. So Swami says that after death, these are the two paths which the souls take, you know, so the Uttarayana and the Dakshinayana path. Of course, here the northern journey and southern journey, sometimes we also speak of this as periods of time.
Right.
Like we have the Uttarayana, which starts the summer solstice, and the winter solstice is preceding that. So essentially with the direction in which the sun moves,
right.
the northern journey and the southern journey, but they are just physical representations of what is happening, like what Swami speaks about is a spiritual aspect
right.
of the same physical manifestation.
Right. In fact, this is one of those discourses which very, very beautifully synthesized some of these abstract concepts,
yeah.
as you were saying about Uttarayana, Dakshinayana, about the prana, which we'll come to in
yeah.
a bit, and very, very practically what needs to be done. Because the whole discourse, as we had that time observed, it starts with a absolutely offbeat padyam,
yeah.
where Swami says, just as the reflections is not stuck in the mirror, just as the lotus leaves are not wet by the water they dwell in, sins cannot stick to a devotee. The concept of devotee and devotion comes much later.
Yeah.
In fact, till that point, Swami is only talking about how every action has a consequence. And going back to this idea of the Chandraloka and Suryaloka, I think it is a very, very important point. In many ways, it distinguishes the Vedantic approach from some other religious belief systems.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Vedanta also speaks about heaven and hell, but it doesn't speak of it as a destination, but it just speaks of it as a
experience,
a pit stop where you kind of, you know, relish or suffer for your actions, but
right.
the journey still continues. I think that is one of the very important points which distinguish Sanatana Dharma from other approaches. So Swami was making that point. And I think in this discourse again, Swami spoke about the Omkar again, where he says, you know, pranava has many ways of benefiting. Is it in this discourse or the next one?
Swami speaks about actually the pranas, like the...
Yeah, pranas, of course.
The life forces, because he brings an important point here that while speaking about the pranas, of course, Swami explains in detail, as does the Upanishad, that the five pranas, the pancha pranas that are there, the
right.
prana, apana, vyana, udana and samana. So Swami goes into details first, like how the prana has come from the sun, the elements, etc. And so on. But the main thrust of the discourse was the udana itself, the function
right.
of the udana, which carries the merits and demerits
of
this... entire, you know, of all the acts that you do. Now, all this is an explanation as to what happens, you know, to the merits of what you have done. So the question is birth, the cycle of birth and death, is it inescapable? Because it seems to be perpetuating that you do acts, there are consequences.
Yeah.
And the consequences, you exhaust some of them and you come back. And you keep, you know, so going through that cycle. And Swami is giving two explanations. There is one, that there is a Dakshinayana path and the Uttarayana path, and that Uttarayana is what you have to aim for, because these are acts that lead to attachment to Brahman, so aim for such acts, whereas the others will keep you in the cycle of birth and death.
Right.
And finally Swami says that all of this can be the pent up, you know, the merits, demerits, all of it can simply be burnt by the power of devotion.
Right.
And essentially that is the answer, that birth and death are inescapable, but it can be escaped through the power of devotion.
Right. And I think that was the most important message in that discourse, because right. as we said, that's how Swami starts it. And till that point, actually, it looks a little gloomy because Swami says that it's a vicious cycle. You cannot escape from it. And another very beautiful analogy which Swami gave in that discourse, which was a real standout, was and an important message to aspirants. Because generally we tend to ask this question of, you know, where did it all begin?
Mm.
We ask this question of, okay, you know, my karma is what is responsible for what I am. So what was my first birth, or, you know, what was the first karma that I did? How did somebody start doing negative karma? I think a similar question is asked to the Guru, and Swami explains through him. He says, what is the point, you know, if you have a seed in your hand, what is the point to find out where did the seed come from? Where did the tree from which the seed came, which was the tree it came from? So he said, what is the whole point in finding out the ancestry of a seed? If you put it in your mouth and chew, it will no more give seeds in future. I think right. that is what is important.
Yeah.
And that is what you should occupy yourself with.
Hmm.
Don't ask where did this life and its sequence begin, but find out ways of putting an end to the sequence now. And Swami, again, taking the same seed analogy, Swami said, which is the seed of a paddy which you can use to grow more paddy? That which has a husk.
Hmm.
The moment you remove the husk, you cannot get paddy from that grain anymore.
Right.
So Swami said that that husk which you have to remove is that of desires. And when the desires are removed, it will no more give more seeds in the future. And that, of course, was connected to what Swami was saying about devotion, where Swami said, you know, when you start offering all your actions to God. And because when Swami said devotion, that's what he says, that when all karmas are done as offerings to God, and I think we must have spoken extensively about that, because this is one of Swami is very fond of making this statement, where you have to do all actions as offerings to God.
Right.
The moment you do that, you disconnect actions from their results. The actions become offerings. The results are no more consequences of your actions, but they are accepted as prasadam from God. In that way, you disconnect, even though they are internally connected, mentally you disconnect your actions from the consequences. And over a period of time, Swami says that you will be able to completely get over this. So the attitude of sarva karma bhagavat prityartham, that Swami mentioned in this discourse and has mentioned many, many times, is what was that final takeaway from this discourse. A very, very beautiful discourse. Crisp one.
Yeah.
But, you know, a wonderful discourse where it starts with a problem and ends with a clear-cut solution to that.
Right.
I think we've completed 7 discourses of the 13. Anything more you'd like to add, or should we keep the rest of the discourses to be completed next week? So we'll be right in the midway.
Yeah. So we can, because it kind of takes off over here. One is I've noticed that the concepts become very dense
exactly.
in the following discourses. I think that is also where we had to invite Brother Pradeep to help
right.
us out with some of the very, very deep terminology that Swami is speaking about. But as we summarize, I think what we are looking for is the essence of what did Swami convey through the, you know, discourses. What are the lessons or the take home that we have? And so we can see that essentially Swami is building up to the, for the students, or even as we are experiencing it, that who we truly are. Like, you know, so Swami takes us through the prajnana first, or the how did life begin, and through that what are we made up of. So Swami already has spoken about the antakkarana, then Swami goes in detail through the pranas,
right?
And all of this Swami is building up slowly to ultimately speak about the Purusha himself,
right?
Which is what we'll be seeing in the subsequent discourses. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can certainly take that up in the
right.
next episode.
I think
yeah.
that what you made was a very important point, because one thing which is coming across in this, in a detailed manner, Swami handling each one of the
yeah.
implements the human birth is made of.
Correct.
Again, the same thing which Swami did in the 1990 series.
Hmm.
And the one takeaway message from that is spirituality is not glossing over these things,
yeah.
is not overlooking them, or not completely discarding the value of them, but to go through them, use them for their right purposes, understanding the value of each one of these layers of you know, human existence, and to make best utilization of them, and then progress towards spirituality.
Because as when you mentioned the 1990 series of discourses, I remembered that they had covered the antahkarana so deeply,
right?
And here Swami is literally taking off from there. So the listeners and well as students who have listened to both these sets, they can actually put together the whole picture.
Right. So I think we'll end with that. Really, how grateful we should be to be able to go back to these discourses again and again. And I'm sure a few years down the line, we'll go back to these discourses and definitely find more to learn from it. And that learning will be endless. So dear listeners, thank you for joining us. Do join us again next week. Just like how we covered 7 discourses, I think we'll be able to cover the remaining in the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. And if we do that, and which we hope we will, that would probably be the last episode of this season of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. So we'd be very grateful if you join us for that too. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. In a few moments from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and of course Professor Venkatraman like past few weeks for the last segment of this Thursday, the Vahini Satsang. Do join us again next week, 7:30, for the final episode of Season 2 of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam.